Welcome to the Enchanted Library, where we turn the pages of books, beautiful and old, living and magical. It's time to curl up, get cozy, and join us on an adventure. Today we're reading from Beautiful Joe by Margaret Marshall Saunders. Chapter 34, Black Jim. A few months after Dandy died, we had a new pet. This one, the most amusing and provoking creature that had entered the family. The Morris boys were walking in the pine wood near Fairport one day, and I was trotting ahead of them when I smelt something alive. I sniffed about, and there, crouching on a heap of pine needles, was a featherless young crow. I barked, and the boys hurried to pick up the poor creature. There were no old crows nearby, so they took it home with them. It became Jack's pet, and soon it got old enough to follow him about. Jack fed him frogs, mice, worms, beef, and bread and milk, and soon the ugly young bird became a glossy creature with strong wings, a heavy beak, and a voice that used to make me jump when he stole up behind me as I lay sleeping in the sun. Our painful pleasure, Miss Laura used to call him. For though she loved him almost as much as her brothers did, he was a great worry to her. He began by teasing the creatures about the place, especially in regard to their food, until most of them got to understand him so well that they would run if they saw him coming. The guinea pig, Jeff, and the rabbits would stick their heads out of the stable door, and if Black Jim, we had to call him this to distinguish him from Jim the dog, was in the garden, they would go back again. The tame rat always ran to his friend Bella the parrot, for Black Jim was afraid of her saucy tongue. The pigeons and Willie's bantams hated him, for when they were all out in the garden feeding, he would swoop down among them and send the pigeons flying and the bantams running with their legs sticking straight out behind them. Then, with solemn crow satisfaction, he would eat their grain, taking on a pretended air of penitence when Miss Laura scolded him. One day he played a shabby trick on Mary the cook. She had bought a fine steak, and it lay on a plate in the pantry window. I saw Black Jim eyeing it from a tree, but before I really knew what was passing through his crow mind, he had swooped down and taken it up to the top of the stable. Mary came into the pantry just in time to see it going, and her gestures and cries were so comical, as she ran out and looked up at Black Jim tearing the family dinner to pieces, that Miss Laura and the boys, who had rushed to the windows, just shrieked with laughter. Sometimes they did not laugh at his tricks. I saw him one day sneak up to Malta as she sat over her dinner out in the yard. You know cats eat slowly, and the way she mouthed her food, turning her head first on one side then the other, seemed to prove to the crow that she had something especially nice. He made a quick run, nipped her by the tail, bracing himself on his sturdy legs, the way I had seen the Morris's sailor boy friend Henry Smith brace himself on his ship when he was hauling in a rope. Malta began spitting and growling. And just as I was rushing to her rescue, she foolishly did what Black Jim wanted her to do, turned on him. He sprang forward, seized a lot of the food from the plate, and flew off with it. He got a severe scolding for this from Miss Laura, but he did not care. He flew away from her and went into the house to Mr. Morris's study. He loved that room. There were so many pencils and pens about, and it was such fun to scatter the ink in the big ink bottle. I heard Mr. Morris say one day to Miss Laura, "That crow is out of his sphere. Could you not persuade him to join his wild kindred in the woods?" "He is Jack's pet," she replied, "and though he has taken him to the woods, he always comes back." "If Jack loves him, we must put up with him," said Mr. Morris, and he patiently put all the small articles about the room into drawers. About the best fun Black Jim had was with the table when it was laid for a meal. He often carried away spoons, knives, forks, and napkin rings, and hid them under a piece of old carpet in the garden, where Jim the dog and I found them and carried them back to the house. One day he got a great fright. He was carrying the table bell in his beak when it rang. He dropped it as if it had been red hot, and flying to the top of the stable said, "Caw, caw," a great many times. He not only persecuted Mr. Morris in his study, but in his pulpit. He had a very sociable disposition, and when Sunday came, he wanted to go to church. As soon as he could fly, he started down the street after the family. I barked warningly, but a crow is willful and won't mind anyone. He was cunning enough to follow the Morrises at some distance, and when they came home, I heard them talking about his actions. Just after they were all nicely seated in church, and Mr. Morris was giving out a hymn, the family, to their dismay, heard a friendly caw, and looking up saw Black Jim seated in one of the open windows. As soon as he discovered their pew, he flew to it, as if to say, "How glad you must be to see me." They were not glad, and made frantic efforts to catch him, whereupon he scolded them in his harsh voice, flew to Mr. Morris in the pulpit, and perched on his shoulder, with an air of, "Here at least I shall be welcome." Mr. Morris, seeing his congregation in fits of suppressed laughter, had hard work to keep his composure. Putting his hand in his pocket, he offered Black Jim his gold pencil case. Thrown off his guard, the mischievous bird seized it with a grateful caw, and Mr. Morris quickly put his hands over his wings and beckoned to Jack to come and get him. After that, Black Jim was locked up every Sunday morning for a time, but he got so cunning that soon he would not allow himself to be caught. Then Jack used to capture him Saturday evening, until finally Black Jim became so knowing that he would not let Jack come near him any day towards the end of the week. Mr. Morris had to put screens in the church windows at his own expense, but when the congregation heard of it, they refunded the money. Black Jim, by this time, we had had him nearly a year, began to plague the whole town, but he was so clever that everybody but a few cranky persons forgave him. He did such funny things that he became quite a celebrity, and it is wonderful what human beings will put up with from celebrities. The housekeepers got to dread Mondays, for he visited the clotheslines far and near, and stealing the pins for his secret hoard, he let the different washes fly to the four winds of heaven. One morning he did a very naughty thing, and yet great good came out of it. Near the Morrises lived an old gentleman called Daniels, who was a passionate lover of flowers. Black Jim often visited him and would walk around the flower beds and snip off blossoms here and there. One would think that Mr. Daniels would hate him, but he did not. He said that birds do good service to man in destroying insect pests, and if Black Jim wished to break off a few flowers, he might. He had plenty, and it would not hurt the plants to be pruned. I used to call on the old man, too, for most dogs love to visit their neighbors, but he never talked to me about his flowers as he did to Black Jim. Perhaps he thought dogs did not care for them, but I could have assured him that dogs love strong-smelling things. Well, one day, he pointed to a large, beautiful flower in his conservatory and said that it was a night-blooming cerris and had come out a few hours earlier. This was early in the morning. He seemed very proud of it, and when he left us to speak to a man, I watched Black Jim anxiously. He had his head on one side, and he was looking at this large, beautiful flower. Unfortunately, the conservatory door was open, and before I could utter one bark, he had flown in, broken off the flower, and was carrying it off in his big beak. I could have bitten him. I was so angry and disturbed about the honor of the family. However, I was powerless. I can keep cats and dogs and chickens in order, but birds are beyond me. When Mr. Daniels came back, he did not notice that his lovely blossom was gone, and I lay down on a heap of weeds and mourned about the sad conduct of Black Jim. Then a very strange thing happened. While I lay on the weeds and Mr. Daniel hoed about some plants, the garden gate opened, and another old man came hurrying up to Mr. Daniels. Both of his hands were stretched out. One of them held the flower that Black Jim had stolen. The other grasped Mr. Daniel's arm. "Edward," he said in a choked voice, "will you forgive me?" Mr. Daniels dropped his hoe and stared at him in amazement. The old man extended the flower. "I know how you prize this, Edward, how you have waited for its blossoming, and to bestow on me your choicest bloom. It was noble, considering how I have used you." Mr. Daniels stared in through the open conservatory door. His flower certainly was missing, but I saw that he could not imagine how it had got into the other man's hand. However, he was pretty wise and said nothing, but just shook hands in silence. Then they both acted as if they were ashamed of their emotion, and fell to talking of gardening matters. I watched them for a while, and then I ran home. There was a mystery here I could not fathom, but the explanation came. Before night, a pretty story was flying about town, to the effect that a long, drawn-out quarrel between Mr. Daniels and his next-door neighbor, Mr. Juniper, had been settled in a delightful way by Mr. Daniels, who had quietly stolen in and laid on his friend's table the most highly prized flower in his possession. Mr. Daniels said nothing, and I said nothing, and the rascal Black Jim said nothing, but after a time a true version of the story leaked out. I think someone had seen the crow on his way through the window of Mr. Juniper's house with the flower in his beak. Anyway, it was a great feather in Black Jim's cap. And after that, no matter what mischief he did, everyone forgave him, for he had not he reconciled these two old enemies? I saw him do a funny thing one day at a baseball game. A man who had some pears in his pocket reached one up to a chubby urchin who sat on the fence above him. The boy was so young that he could not talk plainly, but he knew what was good to eat, and after one bite he half shut his eyes and said, "It am small, but it am delicious." Black Jim, who attended all the ball games, heard him, and in one swoop he took that delicious pear from the poor child. The little urchin's astonishment was so ludicrous that everyone nearby burst into roars of laughter, and the man gave him another pear. Everybody knew Black Jim, and nearly everybody petted him. If Mrs. Morris or Miss Laura went downtown, he often followed them, and when they went into a store, he perched nearby, calling for them to come out. He never allowed anyone to touch him but members of the family. He would let them catch him and shake him or tickle him. Often, when they were playing with him, he would turn on his back, defending himself with his claws and beak, and having as many tricks as a kitten. He used to go and catch mice for Mrs. Morris's grocer, always getting some dainty in return. The butcher gave him choice morsels of meat, but the dressmaker never liked to see him, for he stole her thimbles and spools. Nothing frightened him. Once he saw a big dog gnawing a bone. He flew right in his face. I ran up to distract the dog's attention, but there was no need of my interference, for the dog stood, muzzle in air, gazing foolishly at his bone, sailing off over the housetops. We got Black Jim in the spring, and before we had had him a year, he became restless. After his taking his daily bath, for which he would fairly yell if Jack forgot to give it to him, he used to fly up to the stable roof, dress his feathers, and stare up into the sky. One day he espied some wild crows passing overhead, and with a glad caw, he flew up and joined them. When night came, he did not return, and I felt badly, for Jack was seeking his pet all over the neighborhood. Animals and birds understand each other, but Jack was a human being, and I could not tell him that every drop of wild blood in Jim was calling out for his brother and sister crows. Jack went to bed in great anxiety, for he feared that some mishap had befallen his pet. We did not see him for a whole week. Then one day, as Jack was standing in the garden, there was a rush of wings, and Jim was on his shoulder, pinching his ear and thrusting his black beak into his young master's face, while he chattered about the joys of wild life. I never saw Jack so pleased. He could not bear to part from his pet, and all day long he kept him with him, caressing him and giving him choice bits of food. Black Jim had a regular carnival of mischief on that visit. I remember, for one thing, he called at all his downtown haunts, and, court being in session, he even got into the judge's private office through an open window. He upset the judge's inkstand over some valuable legal documents, and flew off with his gold eyeglasses that were never seen again. Then he disappeared once more. The first crow soaring overhead attracted him, and we did not see him for weeks. On his second return, he was more shy, and would not allow Jack to catch him. On his third, he sat on the stable roof and talked crow very earnestly. There were several other returns, but he never again flew down into the yard. And finally, he became weaned away from us and never came again. Sometimes the Morrises used to think he was dead, but I knew better. Jim was alive and well, and had a family of his own in the pine wood. He remembered the Morrises, and if any of the family went into the wood, he cawed affectionately, though he did not go near them. Chapter 35. The End of My Story. I have now come to the last chapter of my story. I thought when I began to write that I would put down the events of each year of my life, but I fear that would make my story too long, and neither Miss Laura nor any boys and girls would care to read it. So I will stop just here, though I would gladly go on, for I have enjoyed so much talking over old times that I am very sorry to leave off. Every year I have been at the Morrises, something pleasant has happened to me, but I cannot put all these things down, nor can I tell how Miss Laura and the boys grew and changed year by year, till now they are quite grown up. I shall just bring my tale down to the present time, and then I shall stop talking and go lie down in my basket, for I am an old dog now and get tired very easily. I was a year old when I went to the Morris family, and I have been with them for 12 years. I am not living in the same house with Mr. and Mrs. Morris now, but I am with my dear Miss Laura, who is Miss Laura no longer, but Mrs. Gray. She married Mr. Harry 4 years ago, and lives with him and Mr. and Mrs. Wood on Dingley Farm. Mr. and Mrs. Morris live in a cottage nearby. Mr. Morris is not very strong and can preach no longer. The boys are all scattered. Jack married pretty Miss Bessie Drury and lives on a large farm near here. Miss Bessie says that she hates to be a farmer's wife, but she always looks very happy and contented, so I think she must be mistaken. Carl is a merchant in New York, Ned is a clerk in a bank, and Willie is studying at a place called Harvard. He says that after he finishes his studies, he's going to live with his father and mother. Mr. and Mrs. Morris's old friends often come to see them. Mrs. Drury passes through Riverdale every summer on her way to Newport, and Mr. Montague and Charlie come every other summer. Charlie always brings with him his old dog Brisk, who is getting feeble like myself. We lie in the veranda in the sunshine and listen to the Morris family talking about old days, and sometimes it makes us feel quite young again. In addition to Brisk, we have a Scottish collie. He is very handsome and is a constant attendant of Miss Laura's. We are great friends, he and I, but he can get about much better than I can. When the Morris boys are here in the summer, we have gay times. All through the winter, we look forward to their coming, for they make the old farmhouse so lively. Mr. Maxwell never misses a summer in coming to Riverdale. He has such a following of dumb animals now that he says he can't move them any farther away from Boston than this, and he doesn't know what he will do with them unless he sets up a menagerie. He asked Miss Laura the other day if she thought the old Italian would take him into partnership. He did not know what had happened to poor Bellini, so Miss Laura told him. A few years ago, the Italian came to Riverdale to exhibit his new stock of performing animals. They were almost as good as the old ones, but he had not quite so many as he had had before. All the Morris family and a great many of their friends went to his performance. And Miss Laura said afterward, when cunning little Billy came on stage and made his bow, and went through his antics of jumping through hoops and catching balls, she almost had hysterics. The Italian had made a special pet of him, and treated him more like a human being than a dog. Billy rather put on airs when he came to the farm to see us, but he was such a dear little dog, in spite of being almost spoiled by his master, that Jim and I could not get angry with him. In a few days they went away, and we heard nothing but good news from them till last winter. Then a letter came to Miss Laura from a nurse in a New York hospital. She said the Italian was very near his end, and he wanted her to write to Mrs. Gray to tell her that he had sold all his animals but the little dog her family had so kindly given him. He was sending him back to her, and with his last breath he would pray for heaven's blessing on the kind lady and her family that had befriended him when he was in trouble. The next day Billy arrived, a thin white scarecrow of a dog. He was sick and unhappy, and would eat nothing, and started up at the slightest sound. He was listening for the Italian's footsteps, but he never came. And one day Mr. Harry looked up from his newspaper and said, "Laura, Bellini is dead." Miss Laura's eyes filled with tears, and Billy, who had jumped up when he heard his master's name, fell back again. He knew what they were talking about, and from that instant he ceased listening for footsteps and lay quite still till he died. Miss Laura had him put in a little wooden box and buried him in a corner of the garden. And when she is working among her flowers, she often speaks regretfully of him and poor Dandy, who lives in the garden at Fairport. Bella the parrot lives with Mrs. Morris and is as smart as ever. I have heard parrots live to a very great age. Some of them will get to be even 100 years old. If that is the case, Bella will outlive us all. She notices I am getting blind and feeble, And when I go down to see Mrs. Morris, she calls out to me, "Keep a stiff of her lip, Beautiful Joe. Never say die, Beautiful Joe. Keep the game a-going, Beautiful Joe." Mrs. Morris says she doesn't know where Bella picks up her slang words. I think it is Mr. Ned who teaches her, for when he comes home in the summer, he often says with a sly twinkle in his eye, "Come out into the garden, Bella." And he lies in a hammock under the trees, and Bella perches on a branch near him, and he talks to her by the hour. Anyway, it is the autumn after he leaves Riverdale that Bella always shocks Mrs. Morris with her slang talk. I'm glad that I am to end my days in Riverdale. Fairport was a nice place, but it was not open and free like this farm. I take a walk every morning when the sun shines. I go out among the horses and cows and stop to watch the hens pecking at their food. This is a happy place, and I hope my dear Miss Laura will live to enjoy it many years after I am gone. I have very few worries. The pigs bother me a little in the spring by rooting up the bones I bury in the fields in the fall, but that is a small matter, and I try not to mind it. I get a great many bones here, and I should be glad if I had some poor city dogs to help me eat them. I don't think bones are good for pigs. Then there is Mr. Harry's tame squirrel out in one of the barns that teases me considerably. He knows that I cannot chase him, now that my legs are so stiff with the rheumatism, and he takes delight in showing me how spry he can be, darting around me and whisking his tail almost in my face, and trying to get me to run after him so he can laugh at me. I don't think he is a very thoughtful squirrel, so I try not to notice him. The sailor boy who gave Bella to the Morris children has grown to be a large, stout man, and is the first mate of a vessel. He sometimes comes here, and when he does, he always brings presents of foreign fruits and curiosities of different kinds. Malta the cat is still living, and was with Mrs. Morris. Davy the rat is gone, so is poor old Jim. He went away one day last summer, and no one ever knew what became of him. Mr. Morris searched everywhere for him and offered a large reward to anyone who would find him, but he never came back. I think he felt he was going to die and went to some out-of-the-way place. He remembered how badly Miss Laura felt when Dandy died, and he wanted to spare her the greater sorrow of his death. He was always such a thoughtful dog and so anxious not to give trouble. I am more selfish. I could not go away from Miss Laura even to die. When my last hour comes, I want to see her gentle face bending over me, and then I shall not mind how much I suffer. She is just as tender-hearted as ever, but she tries not to feel too badly about the sorrow and suffering in the world, because she says it would weaken her, and she wants all her strength to try to put a stop to some of it. She does a great deal of good in Riverdale, and I do not think there is anyone in all the country around who is as much beloved as she is. She has never forgotten the resolve she made some years ago, that she would do all she could to protect dumb creatures. Mr. Harry and Mr. Maxwell have helped her nobly. Mr. Maxwell's work is largely done in Boston, and Miss Laura and Mr. Harry have to do most of theirs by writing. For Riverdale has got to be a model village in respect to the treatment of all kinds of animals. It is a model village not only in that respect, but in others. It seems as if all other improvements went hand in hand with the humane treatment of animals. Thoughtfulness toward lower creatures has made the people more and more thoughtful toward each other. And this little town is getting to have quite a name through the state for its good schools, good society, and good business and religious standing. Many people are moving into it to educate their children. The Riverdale people are very particular about what sort of strangers come to live among them. A man who came here 2 years ago and opened a shop was seen kicking a small kitten out of his house. The next day, a committee of Riverdale citizens waited on him and said they had a great deal of trouble to root out cruelty from their village, and they didn't want anyone to come there and introduce it again, and they thought he had better move on to some other place. The man was utterly astonished and said he had never heard of such particular people. He had no thought of being cruel. He didn't think the kitten cared. But now when he turned the thing over in his mind, he didn't suppose cats liked being kicked about any more than he would like it himself, and he would promise to be kind to them in the future. He said, too, if they had no objection, he would just stay on. For if the people there treated dumb animals with such consideration, they would certainly treat human beings better, and he thought it would be a good place to bring up his children. Of course, they let him stay, and he is now a man who is celebrated for his kindness to every living thing, and he never refuses to help Miss Laura when she goes to him for money to carry out any of her humane schemes. There is one most important saying of Miss Laura's that comes out of her years of service for dumb animals that I must put in before I close, and it is this. She says that cruel and vicious owners of animals should be punished. But to merely thoughtless people, one should simply say, be kind. Make a study of your animal's wants and see that they are satisfied. You should know better than anyone else how to treat your animal, for you are with it all the time and know its disposition and just how much work it can stand and how much rest and food it needs and just how it is different from every other animal. If it is sick or unhappy, you are the one to take care of it, for nearly every animal loves its own master better than a stranger and will get well more quickly under his care. Miss Laura says that if men and women are kind in every respect to their dumb servants, they will be astonished to find how much happiness they will bring into their lives and how faithful and grateful their animals will be to them. Now I must really close my story. Goodbye to the boys and girls who may read it. And if it is not wrong for a dog to say it, I should like to add, God bless you all. If in my feeble way I've been able to impress you with the fact that dogs and many other animals love their masters and mistresses and live only to please them, my little story would not have been written in vain. My last words are, boys and girls, be kind to dumb animals, not only because you will lose nothing by it, but because you ought to, for they were placed on the earth by the same kind hand that have made all living creatures. This story of Beautiful Joe is actually based on a true story of a dog that Margaret Marshall Saunders knew. You can go to beautifuljoe.org to learn more about the organization that has preserved the parks and the space where the original Beautiful Joe lived, as well as their focus on providing humane care for animals across the world. Thank you for joining us today. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave a review on your favorite podcast platform and share our podcast with a friend. Visit our website at www.enchantedlibrary.net to see our past books or to connect with us on Facebook. If you'd like to support the work we do, you can visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/enchantedlibrary. We appreciate your support. Until next time, friends, happy reading.